There's a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
This is the idea that's so bad, and yet we still talk about it. We still advance it. It's an outrageously expensive and disruptive idea. It's a plan to put a lid over I-5 in Seattle, and it was now declared technically feasible in a recent engineering study, which is the worst way, I think, to talk about it. I think they literally mean, technically speaking, yes, from a technical standpoint, it's feasible. But I read it like, technically it's feasible, but you shouldn't really do it. That's how I'm going to interpret it, because it's a stupid idea. It's like, well, technically, yes, I guess you can do it, but why would you be that dumb? Don't do it.
Yeah, I like the word technically. It gets me out of a lot of things.
Right? It's like, well, technically I stole this from you, but did I really? Well, yes, you just said technically you did. That's all that matters.
But if you return it, then you're just borrowing it. See how technically gets you out?
Well, technically I murdered the person, but I mean, it was a bad person to begin with. That's a bad argument. Recent engineering study made this declaration. It doesn't matter if it's technically feasible. It is a truly awful idea. It is not worth the expense. It is not worth the disruption to this entire region. If you think this is something that's just going to hit Seattle, oh, no, 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 no. You take out I-5 for any period of time, you're going to cause so much disruption that's going to be felt all across Western Washington. Now, the I-5 lid would cover portions of the freeway that cuts through Capitol Hill, First Hill, downtown Seattle, and would provide land for housing and green space. Now, the people who are supportive of this, they're all like, well, conservatively speaking, it would cost about $22 million per acre of lidding. That's conservative, according to the people who support this thing. As someone who's not an idiot, I will say, let's just add an extra $15 million to that. Because number one, you say $22 million. You said that number, 2 years ago at this point? This thing's not going to happen, if it does, for at least another 5 years. So let's just add some money for increased cost of just doing business, construction, labor, all that stuff. And then add some money for the general incompetence that usually is responsible for incredibly over-budget projects. So just add that all in. It's not $22 million. Now, the study goes through a whole bunch of different issues that say, hey, you know what? I know you guys want to do this, but there's some difficult things you have to figure out. Number one, topography, for example. Not the easiest thing in the spaces that we're talking about. And there are going to be limitations on the load that this lid can actually handle. So if you think you're putting a whole bunch of high-rise apartment buildings under the guise of affordable housing, you can't really do that all over the place. You can only do it in certain parts. So it is remarkable that we're still having this conversation. We are right now in the middle of an unprecedented and intertwined homelessness crisis and opioid crisis. Why would we waste hundreds of millions of dollars on something that's a vanity project, is absolutely not necessary for us to have, while we can put it into actually getting people the treatment that they need? I look at this and I say, you know what, even just 1 acre's worth, the $22 million, we'll go with your conservative estimate. Imagine for a moment $22 million being spent on treatment on demand. So anyone who's dealing right now with a heroin addiction or an alcohol addiction or a meth addiction can immediately get help, immediately be put in a treatment patient center. Have the help that they imagine that for a second, and yet you want to put a big lid because you don't like cars. I love that. We have this pristine, magical Seattle, and what's cutting right in the middle of it? I-5, the ugly I-5 with all of this pollution from the cars. We care about the environment here. Yes, we decide that we're going to let homeless people camp out wherever it is they want, throw needles everywhere, and human waste anywhere. But, you know, other than that, oh my gosh, we care about the environment. Let's cover up this blight on Seattle. It's ridiculous. I would love it if every single person listening to me right now would text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770, so I can send you a link to this story for you to not just read, but also post on Facebook, post on Twitter. Let's shine a spotlight on this Project Stupid. That's what we're, it's Project Stupid. Put a spotlight on it so we can help stop it. Because again, if you guys think you're not going to be impacted, let me tell you something. Let's say you don't even go near Seattle. let's say you live in Renton and you commute over to Tukwila or vice versa, whatever it is. Understand that if I-5 in downtown Seattle shuts down for even a moment to do this project, and it would have to, just know that you're not leaving your car for hours. That's how bad it's going to be. That's how absolutely horrific this would be. So text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you a link to the story. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? You can't make this up.
So you've got some Democrats who are pushing for gun control legislation, including a ban on AR-15. And if you're wondering whether or not these people who are pushing for the ban have any clue what it is they're talking about, all you have to do is literally listen to them. Listen to 5 seconds of any conversation, and you'll realize that they have no clue what's going on. Case in point is Representative Sheila Jackson Lee from Texas. She's a Democrat who is a hardcore proponent of banning the AR-15 and taxing any bullets that would go in an AR-15. And I want you to hear just for a moment how she talks about the AR-15 gun.
My bill that I've introduced dealing with the caliber weapon, I've held an AR-15 in my hand. I wish I had it. It is as heavy as 10 boxes that you might be moving.
Okay, so I suppose she might be true. This might be accurate if she's literally means empty boxes, like just like small little like shoe boxes that you find and maybe you put like your silverware in, but without the silverware, because even a fully loaded AR-15 at the most weighs about 7.5, 8 pounds. I mean, I've held an AR-15 before. It's not like 10 moving. Granted, people are always saying, Jason, you're so strong. It's amazing because don't look it, but you've got incredible upper body strength. It ain't 10 boxes filled with items that you're moving. Like, that's not how much it weighs.
I want to know what kind of boxes she's moving.
The empty boxes. And they're not, by the way, they're not even folded into an actual box. They're just flat.
They're flat.
Yeah, that I think is what she meant. And she's like, I wish I had it with me. No, you don't. Because everybody around you, all the other idiots who think that maybe what you just said is accurate, would be like, wow, how are you carrying this box if it's like 10 heavy loads worth of moving material? How could you even lift it? Sheila Jackson Lee, oh my gosh, look at your upper. We used to say Jason Rance has got upper body strength, but man, look at you hold that AR-50. Does anyone actually believe that? It's almost as if she knows she's telling a lie. And she knows she's talking to a whole bunch of folks in the media who are just going to push this. But she's really talking to other people who have no clue about what guns actually are. You can be in favor of banning an AR-15 and not complain that it's so big, so massive, that it weighs about the same as 10 moving box worth of... Oh my goodness, immediately people will go, like, oh my God, that's something you would put on a tank. Do we really want that in the hands of people on our city streets? No, we got to get in the way of that. You know what? Fine. You won me over, Sheila Jackson Lee. Congresswoman, I'm now on your side. Just stop.
So, say you find a moving box that one AR-15 fits in. Wouldn't that make that moving box, like, the AR-15 would be equal weight to...
It's 10 times 10. It's 100! You got the math. -3 divided by pi plus... Yeah, 100. That's insane.
I feel like one moving box that has one AR-15 in it would weigh about one moving box weight.
What bothers me the most in all of this, I had to look up how much about an AR-15 weighs, right? I didn't know specifically how much it was, but I've held one before. There wasn't a single reporter in that interview, because she was doing basically a press briefing, like a gaggle. Not a single person stepped up and said, wait, 10 boxes? What's in the box? Is it just styrofoam? Could you clarify that? Did you mean one box? I'll go with you. One moving box. Okay, fine. I'll go with you on that. But 10? That's 10?
Absolutely horrible way to try and weigh something out.
Is it possible that she held a weapon that was not an AR-15, but someone gave it to her? Like, it was the part of the tank that shoots out?
Could have been like a Gatling gun or something.
Like, just give her this Gatling gun. Because this is an AR-15, because she doesn't know what she's talking. This is an AR-15, and it was just a goof. It was probably some like pro Second Amendment dude. Like, you will not believe. And this is a meme at some point. This is a meme waiting to happen. Cue the people who send me a whole bunch of memes on the text line.
I love those people, by the way. I love a good meme.
Oh, you're such a suck up.
Oh, I'm not. Oh, I'm not because I don't suck up to you.
Yeah, but you don't respect me.
This job's awful.
Yeah, but that's because you don't respect me and I yell at you all the time and I demean you.
I respect our texters.
1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. We got a text from Darren on the 425. You left out the part where she says it uses 50 caliber. I know. I left out a lot of the stupid that came out of her dumb mouth. Because at some point, my head is going to explode. I can't play too many more of these types of clips. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text on the Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline. It's Friday. You know what that means? It means I get to talk movies thanks to our wonderful sponsor, an Alpine Specialty Clean at alpineclean.com. The big movie release of the weekend is Joker. It stars Joaquin Phoenix as the iconic Batman villain. The movie focuses on what turned Arthur Fleck into Joker, a lonely man struggling to find himself in Gotham, a city on the verge of unrest. This is the most humanizing you've seen this character get treated. This is a flawed, mentally ill man dealing with abuse, and you watch the painful and grim journey as he turns into a mass murderer.
Is it just me, or is it getting crazier out there?
You think men like Thomas Wayne ever think what it's like to be someone like me?
Just go before you make a fool of yourself.
I didn't know if I even really existed. But I do.
This movie is deeply, deeply disturbing. This is a slow burn, tense character drama. There's been some controversy about Joker claiming the movie glorifies mass murderers. It does not. This is a position that's taken by people who haven't actually seen the movie. Do not confuse humanizing with glorifying. This takes you through that painful journey that he goes on to become the villain that we all know him. You don't envy him for a second. You don't even root for him. If anything, you're hoping he doesn't go down that path. But with such a well-defined character in the Joker, you know he becomes the bad guy. And the journey manages still to be shocking and appalling and terrifying. Phoenix has never been better. This is a movie that should easily earn him an Oscar. He is that good in it. Todd Phillips, the director, who's best known, by the way, for comedies like The Hangover, he does this dark storyline so much justice. He serves it well. And I loved how they introduced the Batman universe into this particular film, even though stylistically, tonally, it's so much different. There are some flaws in this movie. I think at times it's a little bit too slow. I think the lead up takes a little bit too long. And yeah, when they're talking about social commentary issues, as they're trying to make social commentary issues, they tend to be very heavy-handed. Still, this is a movie that's driven by the performance of Phoenix. He is just simply outstanding. It is rated R. It's very well deserved for that R. Because of the nature of the story and the violence, this is not an easy film to sit through. But it is a good one, and I do recommend it. You should check out Joker. It's out right now. What movie are you going to see? Send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. It's a Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
So if you want to figure out why there's so many prolific offenders on the streets of Seattle, we now have more data to confirm something that I've been talking about for a very long time on the show. And for those of you who have been with me for a while, you've been hearing this come out of my mouth multiple times. We've got a new report out coming from the same folks behind the report that showed the prolific offender problem in Seattle to begin with. They point that the Seattle City Attorney's Office, under Pete Holmes, they declined to prosecute about half of the referrals it receives from the SPD. About half of the 5,000 cases that are referred to them by hardworking men and women of the Seattle Police Department, they say, we don't want to do it. On top of that, of the ones that they are willing to prosecute, it takes them over 6 months to file charges on those cases if they move forward at all. 65% of the time, they decline to press charges of the people who are suspected of crimes but not in custody. Now, they want to pretend that this is an issue because of a budget, that they need $2 million more if they're going to do this job. But the fact of the matter is, and the city is confirming, they've not asked for $2 million. They've asked for one more assistant city attorney. Producer Peyton, how much do you think a assistant city attorney makes? Let me just ask it in a more simple term. Do you think it costs $2 million?
No.
Not even close. They didn't ask for the money. And even if they did, does anyone get the sense that they treat this with any sense of urgency? Have you been hearing anything coming from the Seattle City Attorney Pete Holmes' office sounding the alarms about how serious this is? About how we are in desperate need of giving them the money that they need in order to prosecute? The funny thing is, the prosecutor in Snohomish County, who's trying to get rid of this 2 gram policy so he can actually charge people with, found with under 2 grams of heroin or meth or a hard drug, you know what he's doing? He's sounding the alarms and he says, look, we need more money to prosecute. I need more money. We're not getting any of that from Pete Holmes. Pete Holmes does not want to put people in jail. He does not want to put bad guys in jail. He doesn't want to do his job. And as a result, we've got more and more people living out on the streets. Lots of these folks are homeless. Lots of these folks are living with some kind of addiction, and they're reoffending and reoffending and reoffending some more. There's a story right now over at our sister website, mynorthwest.com. And it shows you that the city council is upset with the idea that people who are on probation, who enter a program and still decline to participate in the program or, you know, stop committing violent acts or theft and whatnot, they're mad that you might end up putting that person in jail. They want you out of jail. I've never heard such nonsense before. They're fighting to keep bad guys out of jail. And you guys are the victims of this. Some of you directly, some of you indirectly. Businesses are shutting down. Businesses are leaving the Seattle area over this. We're going to have a story about that tomorrow. And specifically on this 50% rate of not filing charges officially. We're going to have Mike Solon on the show tomorrow. He is the vice president of the Seattle Police Officers Guild, the union for cops. Imagine for a second working as hard as they do, doing all the footwork, making the arrests, only to see the bad guy back out on the streets the next day doing the same exact thing because Pete Holmes doesn't want to do his damn job. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. The city of Puyallup has spent more on lawsuits around homelessness in the past 5 years than it actually has on nonprofits to serve the homeless community. That according to the Tacoma News Tribune. And at the time, the city says they want to collaborate more with an organization called New Hope, which happens to be the same organization the city spent so much money over in legal battles. Kind of doesn't make any sense to people like me. It's a topic that in a lot of ways I think has defined Puyallup races, the topic of homelessness. Joining me on the line is a candidate for Puyallup City Council, Paul Herrera. Paul, thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So when you see these numbers, when you see these details about how much the city is spending on legal services versus how much they're using to help the community who are living in squalor, living out in parks, what's your reaction to that, your take?
Well, homelessness is affecting everybody, and seems like Puyallup, the perception is that we don't know what we're doing, talking to people at the doors, that's one of the number one issues for people, when I'm out door knocking, is the homeless issues, and compiled with just the lawsuits and just what people are seeing around their community, they're not very happy.
So what do you think the city is doing wrong right now? What would you do if you were in power to help address this issue?
Well, homelessness, people like to lump it in one big thing together. I like to slice it up for what it is. Puyallup has always taken care of its temporary homeless with, Helping Hands and St. Francis House. And we want to continue that part. And Puyallup has a big heart, and they've always done that. But it's that element that doesn't want to, go and the criminal element of it. But that's the one that we need to look at. And we need to look at, like what you were saying yesterday about root causes. I'm always looking at root causes. I was an undercover narcotics detective, so I know all about the trends, habits, and idiosyncrasies of that stuff. And I want to look hard at the root causes of this.
So the argument on how much has been spent fighting in you know, legal battles over this is a little over $1 million. The argument is essentially, we have to do this because this is how we can, in the long term, get all of our ducks in a row and make sure we're doing things the right way. We've tried to pass policies that have been challenged in court, policies that presumably, you know, there's a good faith belief that they could work. So do you think that the city is spending too much money in court?
Of course, yes. Way too much money in court. That's... You know, $1 million is a lot for this city. You know, the city of Puyallup is not that big. People think it's a huge city. It's only 41,000 people. And that's a big deal. People pay taxes here, and they don't want to go to that type of stuff.
So where would you put the money? If waving the magic wand, again, what ended up being spent was about $872,000. If you can have that money plus the $1 million, how would you prioritize, understanding, to your point, that this is more of a complex issue?
Well, you know, there's all kinds of places where you can put money, and, you know, lawsuits is the last place you want to put it. You know, cities have all kinds of stuff that needs to come up, and the more money you're putting in lawsuits, the less the city can get for services and other things that are needed and that are required. So, you know, we'll take a look at all those things.
Do you have faith in the New Hope Resource Center, which has been at the sort of the top of the controversy list in the neighborhood there, say that, hey, we're getting a whole bunch of garbage and drug use and crime that they believe is connected to New Hope. And there seems to be a general sort of belief by the city that there's at least some red flags.
Yeah, so, you know, New Hope, you know, I'm a police officer, and I work in the Tacoma area, and I've seen the unintended consequences of people trying to help. They had the Tacoma Indian Center up on Market Street in downtown Tacoma, and they moved it to the east side of Tacoma, right in smack into the middle of the neighborhood, to be so the people that go to that place can be closer to the hospital that's over there. Well, instantly, 50 plus people moved into that area, and everybody's upset about that. So, you know, New Hope is right in the middle of where everybody can see, and it's affecting businesses in the area. It's affecting people in there, and I think it's an unintended consequences of people trying to help.
Just joining me, we're talking with Paul Herrera. He is running for Puyallup City Council. We're talking about homelessness and a Tacoma News Tribune story that indicated that the city of Puyallup has spent considerably more money in legal challenges and legal fights than they have in actually donating to homeless resources. You know, one of the fights, Paul, has to do with the fact that they had this ordinance that said, hey, you've got only certain zones in which you can come up with these, you can actually construct these homeless centers. Did you support that original ordinance?
The ordinance for how far they could be from...
Yeah, it had to be... yes, exactly.
Well, I think they were talking about how many distances, and I think they finally voted on a 500-foot buffer. I think it should be farther out. So it doesn't need to be right in the middle of everything, just for safety reasons.
What kind of safety reasons?
Well, I mean, just, as a law enforcement officer, you know, people see, you know, what's going on out there, and, our parks are right there in the middle. It's kind of a center of the heartbeat of the city. And, we have other areas in the city that would probably best serve, the homeless people in the area.
Now, some people obviously will take that as and accuse you of trying to push everybody out of sight, out of mind, and this would actually hurt folks. But that's not what you're actually doing, right?
No. So, I look at it like this. I'm a veteran, and I use the VA. And the VA is in Lakewood, and another one's in Seattle. And I have to go where the services are. I'm not expecting Puyallup to put a VA hospital in downtown Puyallup because I live here.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I look at it.
When you look at what's going on in Puyallup and you take a look at how homelessness is impacting, Seattle, Olympia, Everett, Is there this fear of the creep coming from some of these other cities around you, particularly Seattle, where it seems like this problem is just getting completely out of control?
Sure, there's creep everywhere. What happens sometimes in the area, at least in the Tacoma area, they have, you know, big city homeless shelters and things like that, and they do have rules. And, you know, the bad people who are, you know, doing bad in those shelters, they can get kicked out of those areas. So they'll migrate to, let's say, Puyallup. You know, I see the same faces that I deal with every day in Tacoma area sometimes show up here in Puyallup. So it's a regional thing, and they do move around.
Generally speaking, do you think cops are given enough authority to help in this regard?
Well, you know, people think cops, you know, we see the human side of things.
Yeah.
We know, you know, we see the human side of things. We're not robots. You know, we talk to the homeless. We know their plight. We know the different layers of homelessness, you know, and it comes down to, you know, the drug addiction and mental illness, which are one and the same. And, you know, people forget about the human side of things. And, you know, homelessness has always been around, and we just got to keep fighting at it. You know, some people think the war on drugs was a failure, but, you know, and we can't say that about homelessness. It's just like we can give up on everything. Like you could say that, why wash my face? It's just going to get dirty again. I say you got to keep washing it. You got to keep at it. And, yeah.
Yeah, and surely there can be some sort of compromise between a full-out war on drugs and basically legalizing everything and enabling folks who are living out on the streets, clearly sure. Dealing with addiction, and yet we pretend, oh no, these are people who are just living out on the streets because rent got too high. We know that that's just not true.
No, not at all. It's root causes. It's drugs, and everybody knows us. This opiate epidemic, we all knew it was coming. In the early 2000s, we had a meth epidemic coming, you know, meth labs and everything. Mm-hmm. And that time, at least in the Pierce County area, you know, they did something about it. They passed policies to make the ingredients to make meth labs really hard to get, like Sudafed had to go behind the thing and stuff like that. Any trace amount of possession of methamphetamine, you can catch a felony charge. Seems like we're going the opposite way with this opiate epidemic.
Yeah, and as we go the opposite way, surprise, surprise, the problem actually gets worse. We've been talking with Paul Herrera. Yeah. He is running for Puyallup City Council. Paul, thank you so much for spending some time with us. We wish you the best of luck in your campaign. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you very much.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show, 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text on the NumBetter Tax Resolution Hotline. Welcome back to The Jason Rand Show live in the Online Trading Academy studio. Stick around in about 10 minutes. Russell Wheaton is going to stop by. He's a council member over in Salton. He's going to talk about some of the ways that they are handling crime and homelessness there. But there's a story that's actually going to be live tomorrow at KTTH.com that I'm going to give you a sneak peek at. Because if you believe 2 + 2 = 4, understand that if a student who's asked that question in a public school in Seattle says 5, you better not correct that student. Because if you do, you're an oppressor. Math in Seattle schools will become a social justice course. But that's not all. Got some more great news. U.S. government is going to be posited as a racist institution that must be destroyed and recreated. If this ends up actually getting taught to school students, this is indoctrination at its most destructive. An Ethics Studies Advisory Committee under the Seattle Public Schools Superintendent, they published a preliminary math ethnic studies framework document that was populated by district representatives all across the state. These are educators. And it explains that math is a racist study that's used to oppress people. And if you dare correct a student's faulty math, you are guilty. This is social justice warriors taking over our school districts. The framework created by various statewide districts, it tackles 4 themes. I've got the document right in front of me. The 4 themes: origins, identity, and agency. That's number 1. Power and oppression. History of Resistance and Liberation, and Reflection and Action. For math. For math. At its core, there is this belief in this document that, quote-unquote, Western math is viewed as the only legitimate expression of math identity, and that it's used to, quote, disenfranchise people and communities of color, and as a consequent, it, quote, erases the historical contributions of people and communities of color. Oh, did you know that it does that? I didn't know that.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Now, of course, this has nothing to do with anything you should be teaching in a math class from K through 12, but that's what they're looking at. Apparently, math is now subjective because this framework document asks, where does power and oppression show up in our math experiences? Who gets to say if an answer is right or not right? Who gets to say if an answer is right? Who are you to insist 2 plus 2 equals 4? How dare you, sir? It goes on to say, who is smart? Who is not smart? I have an answer. Teacher, I have an answer. Can I answer?
Yeah, go ahead, Jason.
Thanks, Mr. Behrens. Thank you. I really appreciate it. The person who says 2 plus 2 equals 5 is not yet smart and should be corrected, even if you think it oppresses them, because we'd like to put them in a position where they could be labeled as smart. This is not difficult to understand. The framework believes math is manipulated to allow inequality and oppression to persist. It says, who is doing the oppressing? I think the answer to that is supposed to be a white, cisgendered, heterosexual Christian male. I think that's the person who is oppressing folks in math. Just FYI. They don't give the answer. They just ask the questions. I'm answering the questions.
Oh, good job.
Thank you. They ask, how has math been used to resist and liberate people and communities of color from oppression? So ironically, by the way, if you subscribe to the social justice worldview of math, which is, of course, ridiculous, if you teach anyone that there's no such thing as a correct answer, you will be doing not just immeasurable harm, but I would argue you're probably oppressing students. Now, if you thought that it's crazy because it's math, don't worry. They also get into history. The radical educators aren't just looking to redefine the study of math, but they seem ready to use history courses to present what I can only describe as an aggressively progressive worldview. And they're using the socialist activist Howard Zinn to indoctrinate these kids. So in my hand, see, it's really here. I've got the U.S. History Ethnic Studies Framework, which insists, quote, the United States government was founded on racist intellectual premises and economic practices that institutionalized oppression of people of color that continues to the present day. Still happening. And the document doesn't hide any of their goals here. They want to demonize capitalism. They call it exploitative. They call it oppressive. In one piece, it says that mass incarceration is now, quote, the new Jim Crow. Oh, my God. It wants students to understand that, quote, Europeans brought the dominant worldview values of guns, the Bible, private property, and social hierarchy, and racial supremacy. Now, I think that when we're talking about how a topic like this can be taught in school history specific, I do think that reasonable people can argue that history has been whitewashed, that we would all benefit from a more honest and holistic approach to how contemporary society has been shaped. I think that that is fair. I think we should do that right now. We should see how there were things when I was in history class that some of it was just wrong. But this document of what equates to possible recommendations to go to teachers, it goes way beyond that. This would be teaching ideological perspectives. This isn't teaching history. This is teaching propaganda, and you're trying to get students to think a certain way. Now, the school district got back to me. They sent me a rather long email, most of which I'm going to publish tomorrow in my piece over at ktth.com. And they want to point out that, you know what, this is not the committee's recommendations. These are just the notes, essentially, of all the work that's been done by others so far. They held their first meeting yesterday, a part of this committee. This committee, by the way, was created by the Democrats in Olympia who mandates this. And it's all about creating an elective studies course at public schools. And they note at this time, it would just be, if they do it, an elective class offering. At this time, there are no requirements to have these courses. Do you think if we continue to give Democrats power in Olympia, it's going to still remain an elective? Or do you think the goal of this is to legitimately teach students this kind of propaganda? This should alarm every single person who's got a kid in a public school in Seattle. And frankly, it should alarm everybody else who has kids in a public school. I don't care that you live in Monroe or Kenmore or Mukilteo or Everett or Tacoma or Longview. This is going to spread. Bad policies of Seattle have the tendency to spread. This is a horrific, horrific move. And once you get social justice warriors power, once you give them power in these committees, then it gets to the superintendent's office. And by the way, the superintendent's office already has a lot of that. The woman who sent me a note via email from the superintendent's office wanted me to know that her pronouns are she, her, and hers. This stuff is already spreading. So the question is, what are you going to do to make sure that it doesn't get to your community? And what can you do to help us here in Seattle make sure that this doesn't continue? This is dangerous stuff. And here's the kicker in all of this. And I look at this bit of news I'm about to tell you, and I'm actually proud. There are progressive activists. There are deeply progressive people that I know. Hardcore progressives who look at this and they're embarrassed. They're embarrassed. And so one good thing that can come out of all of this is shining a spotlight on this to embarrass reasonable people who may still very well vote on the left. But they're the ones who are going to help us fight this kind of nonsense from spreading, because reasonable Democrats don't want anything to do with this. And they're going to fight along with us conservatives against this nonsense. Tomorrow morning at KTTH.com, we'll have the blog. I'm actually not going to be on the air tomorrow, so I'm not going to be able to pitch it. But Jason Matera, who's going to be in for me, producer Peyton, said he was going to force to talk about this, and I appreciate that.
No problem.
1-800-465-8770. Send me a text, Jason Rancho.